Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org, 1798part2.org, and republicreview.org. Well, happy Independence Day. Today's the official Declaration of Independence. And so I got a special reading for you. We're actually going to go through the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, something that very few people have ever read, but I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read the things that were cut out that Jefferson put into the Declaration of Independence. And the reason why they were cut out was probably more for political correctness. Excuse me. But I want you to know, at least this audience should know, what was in the original Declaration of Independence. And so let me also say that you are listening to the only show that asserts the only constitutional solution in dealing with federal encroachments and getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. The phone lines are open, and so if we have a caller and I have a problem, I know how to troubleshoot at this time, because I've had a couple of callers call in, and one time be able to get through and another time not, and so it's in my hands now. I have fired all my tech guys. Anyway, I'm just kidding. The big news that I have is I want to get into the restoration of compassionate services for America. If you want to really understand what made America great and why America was so much different than every other republic, that is a primary factor. So I think it's important that we cover that so that you know really what we have to do in restoring our constitutional republic. The show, as you know, is dedicated to supporting state legislators who are willing to commit to protecting their citizens from federal tyranny. Because bottom line, what that means is they're willing to protect all of us from federal tyranny. If one person stands up against Goliath, that means they're standing up against Goliath for all of us. I also have a warm spot in my heart for those local grassroots leaders, those who are the chairs of the central committees for the county or legislative districts, and the other grassroots groups and organizations that are out there that are working in getting the right people in and elected. Because without them, the elections would literally be whoever shows up to sign, and we would have all sorts of bad vetting, bad candidates, and so forth. It's very important. That's why parties need to vet and ensure that those who are getting the label of the party truly represent the platform and the positions of the party. So I would just want to make sure that everybody understands that this show is really dedicated to those people. So if you're a chair, by all means, let's call, let's talk about what we need to do. Because bottom line, when the chairs and when those in the in the political fray, those who want to get elected, are willing to commit to the Constitution, that means that we here in this show, I'm going to ask you, my listeners, to support those who are committed to that. That means they've signed pledges. That means that they are on board with centering their party and their local organization and their focus in office on the Constitution, instead of what's good for them, or maybe, you know, what's good for a few but not good for all. And bottom line, we've got to stop allowing our politicians and even our grassroots leadership in selling us downriver for the party's interest or for the interest of a few, because the Constitution is in the interest of all. Let me point out, I have an excellent presentation that I would highly recommend you go and take a look at. It's on the reclaimingtherepublic.org. It is my YouTube. Just watch the first 30 minutes, and I go through this every once in a while. So for those of you that are new listeners, because the show is still growing, and I appreciate that, to get the word out. If you go on to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page, and you just scroll down, there's a little link or a blue link to a YouTube video. You press that link and it will show you a presentation that I provide that gives you the details on the Constitution. And I put it into a framework that proves that the Constitution has been violated for well over 100 years and what we need to do and how republic review is the only process. So if you have a mailing group of patriots, if you have neighbors or what have you that are like-minded, have them over, watch it, send it to them, get them to watch it. It's about the message. There is no money involved in this. I'll just take a real quick second. I have worked out some of the details. I am still working on the campaign, and you will be the first to know, or maybe the second, to know when the crowdfunding is up, launched, and available. I do need support. Let me grovel, but I'm going to qualify my groveling here. If you want to support, and you are supporting, let's say you're sending the link to that YouTube video, my presentation, out to people, then keep doing that. That's great. We need to get that message out. At a bare minimum, that's a message that needs to get out. If there are things that you want to do, then by all means, you do those things. If you want to help, I have work that needs to be done. And so you can save me from doing that work. And that means that I can throw work to you. If you have a computer, if you have a phone, if you have just fundamental skills on both of those things, then you will do great. I promise you. But if your comfort zone is doing what you do, then you don't need to necessarily call and say, hey, I want to help. Because again, if you're just sending out the videos and those types of things, then that's great. I don't have the time to sit down and talk to people about, and I'm not complaining. I appreciate it that I'm actually having conversations with people of what they can do. But if it's not something that we need done that'll actually further the cause and be very specific in approaching the state legislators, county leads, and so forth, then, and you want to do something else, then fine, just do that. But if you want to help me with what I need done, then by all means, you got to be willing to make phone calls and willing to do research on your computer and that type of stuff. But if you're not, then I appreciate everything that you are doing. And if you want to send me an email, it's info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And just let me know, hey, this is what I'm doing. And we'll leave it at that. And I'll appreciate it and thank you. And you keep doing those great things. Other than that, I want you to know that I've looked through the news. I've scanned. I've searched. And there is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its roles, responsibilities, and powers as of today. I will tell you, I may be clairvoyant, but I do not believe that tomorrow or this week or this month or even this year, one role, responsibility, or power will be shut down. And so I'll just leave it at that. That means that we'll have to do it. We could just go on and on and on. There is no likelihood that the monster will tear apart it, take off one of its appendages for its for the benefit of the republic, because it is the antithesis of a self-generating and power-hungry government to allow itself to literally surrender or give up something that it already has taken, usurped, and possesses. So that means we have to do this, folks. Now, I've had an open question on the what, where in the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to create, manage lands and reservations of any type, for whether that be for race, culture, for trees, animals, for environmental stuff, and so forth. It is in, and if you want to know precisely where, it would be Article 1, because I'm going to drop this question because I don't want to keep on intimidating people. But if you look at Article 1, Section 17, this is where it identifies the types of property that the federal government has constitutional authority to use. And so you won't find anything in there that gives it the authority to create reservations for trees, reservations for people, or any of those needful things, because those are not needful things for the federal government to do or manage. And so I'm going to have another question, and I will be letting you tickle you with that tomorrow. But with that, let me just move forward, because we're just about 30 seconds away. I want you to know that today, in 1964, today the Civil Rights Act was signed by President Johnson. The question is, when will the states do the same, but instead of making it a political weapon, when will they basically create a true neutral Civil Rights Act that ensures that everybody is treated with dignity and respect, and that we can actually not have to have quotas and those types of things, affirmative action, because that is not the role of government. The role of government is to ensure that we all have an equal footing and playing field. Anyway, I'm at a hard break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And as I was saying at the beginning of the show, happy Independence Day. During the American Revolution, the legal separation of the 13 colonies from Great Britain in 1776 actually occurred today, when the Second Continental Congress voted to approve a resolution of independence. And that proposed resolution came from Richard Henry Lee of Virginia, declaring the United States independent from Great Britain. Now, when I say it came from him, he was the one that moved it on the floor. To be honest and to be very clear, it was actually written by a member of Five. And the five members that were that actually worked on the Declaration of Independence was John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Roger Sherman. And let me give you a back brief on him, because I talk about him a lot. He is the only person of these five who actually signed all four of the United States papers. And what I mean by that, the Continental Association, the forming of the Continental Congress, the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the U.S. Constitution. So the guy was kind of around, and you could literally call him the real, one of the real fathers that was present in all of the processes. More importantly, if you understand, and I've talked about him a lot, Roger Sherman was the one that provided the Sherman Compromise. He is the father of the concept of American republicanism, where I talk very specifically about how we recognize two separate constituents within our republican form of government, or our representative government. One constituent is, of course, we the people. We the people of the sovereign states is one specific representative. And within the states, it's we the people of the counties. And so then the second constituent, or that second representative body, are the sub-elements of that republic. In the grand republic of the national aspect, that would be the states. Within the county, or within the states, it would be, I gave it away, the counties. So the counties are the sub-element of government. That's why they have seats of government. That's why they have a legislative, an executive, or kind of, so to speak, the enforcer, which would be the sheriff. And they even have county courts and so forth. The counties are an independent, not necessarily sovereign, but they have an independence from each other, and they have separate interests, just like states do. And states are sovereign. The states have full sovereignty. However, the important thing is that representation of these two constituents, the sub-element of government as well as the people, have unique and disparate interests. The people, and that's why Congress was given, I should say, the House of Representatives within Congress, they, as representing the people, had this responsibility of guarding the people from having to go fight wars unnecessarily, or having to be compelled to be into a standing army, or and so forth. So the people's interest is guarded by the House of Representatives. The state's interests are guarded by the Senate. And within the states, the county's interests are guarded by the Senates in the state. And the people's interests are guarded by the representatives, or that the smaller body, lesser body, I shouldn't say smaller, it's usually larger, that lesser body within within their Congress or their legislative body. Some of them call them the House, or some of them call them the representatives. Either way, there are and there is a unique perspective of representation in American republicanism, and Roger Sherman was the godfather of that concept. The other one was Robert Livingston. He was from New York. He also participated in the Constitutional Convention as well as the ratification debates, because I cited him, and you heard that just recently here. Anyway, the Constitution went forth, and it was read all around the United States. And in July 18th, if you ever do the Freedom Trail or that Freedom Walk or what have you up in Boston, then you will know that on the 18th, right there on the balcony of Faneuil Hall, is where the Declaration of Independence was read at the old State House. And one of the people in the crowd was Abigail Adams. She happened to witness it, and she actually wrote a little letter to John, who was down in Philadelphia at the time, about the incident and her thoughts. So anyway, like I said, I do want to get into the original Declaration of Independence, but what I want to take a quick moment and talk about, and I've got maybe 5-6 minutes, I want to talk about restoring compassionate services within America. If you go to Mobius Strip Press and you go to the, I think it's the status on publications, at the very, very bottom, there are five books that I identify that I'm planning on publishing. One of those is Energy Policies and Strategies. Isn't it interesting that we have, and I believe Jimmy Carter, when he usurped and trampled on the Constitution, creating the Department of Energy, I believe he said that they were going to create a strategy that was going to move us away from foreign interest and independence of energy. Well, I don't see no strategy, and I actually do not see anything other than greater dependence and the fact that we have to spend more money on energy than we should be. And for a nation that has all sorts of energy resources, natural energy resources to itself, it is a shame that we're in this position, because the globalists and the socialists that have been in power from the Bushes, Clintons, and Obama, even before that, have been constantly selling us downriver. As you know, if you've ever read The Creatures from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin, you might understand and you might know that there was kind of a deal done that oil would be given to the Rockefellers and banking would be taken over by the Rothschilds. And so both of those autonomous entities would take and start literally monopolizing and controlling those two market spaces. And as you know, the Federal Reserve has been printing money since we got off the gold standard, as they moved us away from that. And I know Kennedy tried to move us back to at least the silver and back to a backed currency. There's a lot of people that speculate that that's why he died. I don't know. But the point is that we have to have a strategy. And if we don't have a strategy and we're not working a plan, then, you know what they say, if you don't have a plan, then you're planning to fail. And so another book that I'm writing is Education and the Self-Licking Ice Cream Cones that are out there. Another one is called The General Welfare and How to Fix That. The next one would be Infrastructure for the 22nd Century. And then the final one is Future Assimilation and Ending Domestic Abuse. Most of these books have their arms around what I call compassionate services. Because if you understand education, education is a compassionate service. Who used to perform education prior to the state stepping in the 1850s? That was the churches. As a matter of fact, every single higher university back in those days, Harvard, Yale, or the Ivy League, and so forth, even, so some of them weren't. I mean, Jefferson created the University of Virginia, and that was not a religious institution. So when states started creating their own, they were moving away from the religious controls. But religion was literally getting out of the business because, at that point in time, the states stopped paying for those compassionate services. And as they stopped paying for that, the problem was, and I've explained this to people before, and actually I believe I explained this in my interview with Dan Happel the last week, that the problem that occurred was there was this vacuum, because the Anglican Church in many of the states were the controlling church. They controlled the majority of all the people as far as teaching, compassionate services, and everything else. So when all of a sudden they were no longer the state-backed church and was no longer receiving revenue, then it was really hard for competition to just instantly come in and try to, you know, beat them out or try to take over some of those compassionate services. It was hard. It was difficult. In Virginia, prior to them becoming truly non-denominational in Virginia, the Anglican Church would actually go after the Baptist ministers and so forth. Anyway, the history is that because there was a monopoly and then all of a sudden the monopoly was shut down, there was really no way to create a competitive environment for education, healthcare, and those compassionate services. That doesn't mean we can't go back to that. That doesn't mean that there is merit in that, because if you really think about it, and most people's problems with healthcare is the fact that it is profit-driven. What would happen if all of a sudden nonprofit institutions literally took those over like they used to? Who gave us St. Joseph's? Who gave us St. Mary's? Who gave us a lot of our medical hospitals and institutions? Most of them came from religious entities. And so if you understand what made America great was the involvement and the symbiosis between religious institutions and the local communities and society. But anyway, I've kind of ran out on this, but when we come back, we will get into the Declaration of Independence, and then we'll finish up on the bounties for the cod fisheries. So please stay tuned. We've got some real education for you, so we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Now, I know I've ranted a little bit in the past over over some of the inaccuracies that you hear by some of the progressives regarding American history. I know that there was no doubt that America had well entrenched within its labor system was slavery. However, contrary to the popular progressive paradigm, America didn't invent slavery. It happened to have been around for a few thousand years. As a matter of fact, one of the first empires to embrace it that went 3,500 years using slavery was the Egyptian Empire, Roman Empire, China. Every nation in America, or I should say in America, in the entire world, every empire used slavery. I even like to point out that even though there were some sovereign nations towards the very end or towards the American Revolution, like the Dutch colonies, or I should say Holland, the Netherlands, and so forth, some of those countries actually did not embrace, or they did not, let me say this correctly, they did not have slavery as an institution. However, when you traveled there and you had slaves, they recognized slaves as property, and they did not make it illegal so that, you know, you couldn't bring slaves with you. So I just want to be clear that they recognized that that was a standard of labor, and it had been a standard of labor for, again, 5,000 years prior to the American Revolution. And so the interesting thing that most people do not get out of the Declaration of Independence is what was taken out of it. Now, I actually have a copy, and you can go online and find an actual manuscript of what Jefferson wrote, and then you can even find a manuscript that shows what Jefferson wrote completely, and they highlight either with italics or something like that what was taken out, and then they also, you know, insert with brackets or what have you things that were added to the declaration from the committee before it was sent to the body of the whole. And so one of the things I think is really important is that we know what was removed and why it was removed. And so down, this is kind of like on the third page of the Declaration of Independence, because all of this extra wording is in the original, it seems a bit longer, and it is a bit longer. But let me indulge here what Jefferson really said. And he says, and this is what's been taken out. There's a lot of other little blurbs here and there, but this is the first major paragraph that was taken out. He, when he's talking about King George, has incited treasonable insurrections of our fellow citizens with the allurements of fortune and confiscation of our property. He, King George, has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain, determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. He has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this execrable commerce, and that this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished die. He is now exciting those very people to rise arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people of whom he also obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with crimes which he urges them to commit against the lives of another. Is that not a good insight as to what Thomas Jefferson really was feeling? And I want you to know, again, during the Constitutional Convention, I've said this before, I'll say it again, 10 of the states were already abolishing slavery or ready to abolish slavery and hadn't, like Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, and those states had not, but they were willing to let it go. There were only 3 states that ruled the 13, and that was Georgia and the Carolinas. Those 3 states basically ensured that we would have a racial divide and a rift that would last well over 2 centuries. We are still having to deal with the bad decisions of those 3 states. Now, as I think I said earlier, South Carolina came out and apologized for that, but I'm not sure if that really resonated to the tone that it should have, because I don't know if they really go back to the fact that it, you know, they take the responsibility for being one of those who leveraged that compromise within the Constitution. Now, another part that was taken out of the Declaration of Independence is the next second paragraph down from that, and it's a big portion that was literally taken out, where it said, "Who mean to be free?" And I'll just actually read the whole part here. "A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a people." It actually says free people in the one you're familiar with, but it says of a people, and then this is what it used to say, "who mean to be free. Future ages will scarcely believe that the hardiness of one man adventured within the short compassions of 12 years to lay a foundation so broad, so undisguised for tyranny over a people fostered and fixed in principles of freedom." Interesting how he just really eloquently pokes King George in the eye. And in the next paragraph down, it's almost over half the paragraph was removed when this was removed out. And this is what he said: "No one of which could warrant so strange a pretension that these were affected at the expense of our own blood or expense of our own blood and treasure, unassisted by the wealth or the strength of Great Britain, that in constituting indeed our several forms of government, we had adopted one common king, thereby laying a foundation for perpetual league and amity with them, but that submission to their parliament was no part of our constitution, nor ever in idea, if history may be credited, and we have appealed to their negative justices and magnanimity." And so it's interesting how he's kind of pointing out that they acquiesced to the king, but they didn't acquiesce to Parliament. And another paragraph, and this is the final paragraph, or actually there's a paragraph and a half, so let me kind of get through this because I'm running out of time. "And when occasions have been given them by the regular course of their laws of removing from their councils the disturbers of our harmony, they have, by their free election, re-established them in power. At this very time, too, they are permitting their chief magistrate to send over not only soldiers of our common blood, but Scotch and foreign mercenaries to invade and destroy us. These facts have been given the last stab to agonizing affection and mainly our manly spirit abides us to renounce forever these unfeeling brethren. We must endeavor to forget our former love for them and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We might have been free and a great people together, but a communication of grandeur, of freedom, it seems to be below their dignity, be it so nice, since they will have it. The road to happiness and glory is open to us too. We will tread it apart from them." And then in the very final portion of the declaration, he says, "These states reject and renounce all allegiance and subjections to the King of Great Britain and all others who may hereafter claim by, through, or under them. We utterly dissolve all political connection which may heretofore have subsisted between us and the people of Parliament of Great Britain. And finally, we do assert and declare these colonies to be free and independent states." So there you have it. I couldn't have said it more eloquently, but anyway, I just felt that it was more important to get those parts in so that you knew what was taken out, because there was no doubt in my mind, especially this last little paragraph that I just read, that was literally a poke in King James' eye. And so we'll be right back after word from our sponsors, and we'll kind of summarize this, and we'll get into the bounties for the cod fisheries. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so I think it's very interesting that the political correctness existed a long, long time ago, that you could tell the southern states did not want to make such insightful comments regarding slavery. And if you understand the context of that, that really meant that the Carolinas, parts of probably Virginia at the time, because Virginia's sentiments, it took another 20 years to a point where they were pretty much fed up, or I should say they were at the point where they wanted to get rid of slavery. Even though there were still a lot of plantations, the majority of those plantations that wanted to maintain slavery, the 900 and some men that voted for slavery in the South, most of them were in the Carolinas, I believe Alabama, Mississippi, the Deep South. And so the other factor was that they definitely didn't want, and it was interesting, they were committing treason by putting out that Declaration of Independence. Anybody can tell that. However, when you look at how they tried to soften the tone, I'm going, you know, why did they do that? Why did they not? Because when Jefferson said, we dissolve any claims that you have or any future person or any future monarch that comes along that wants to try to claim us, we dissolve that completely. I mean, I just love the fact that he didn't hold any punches, and he put it out there. Because bottom line, I mean, they can only kill you once, unless they did what France was doing a little bit earlier. Because if you, I think I've mentioned this before, Sir Isaac Newton wrote a book that committed heresy against the church, and that book, I believe it was Notes on the Revelations of Daniel and John the Revelator, or what have you, of the end times. I think that book may be on reclaimingtherepublic.org. And so you go look at that. But that book was not published until after 6 years after his death, because they had a law that said if you spoke illy, if you blasphemed the church of, you know, France, then you would be dug up and burned unless it came out after 6 years. And so his nephew actually published that book so that it would be done 6 years after his death, so that he would not be dug up and burned. And so he knew what he was doing. He knew he was committing heresy against the church. So I don't believe that the framers, they didn't have those laws, but it seemed like they were kind of soft pedaling a little bit. They wanted to be treasonous, but not heretical. Anyway, I just want to also reemphasize that the focus with this program on the states is critical, that we have to start focusing on the parents, and the states are the parents in this relationship between the states and the federal government, or what I call the general government. And so that's why I am reaching into very specific races. This weekend, I reached into Tennessee. I did the research on it. I've reached out to half of them. The other half will probably get contacted tonight. And there's a lot of contested races in Tennessee compared to the Dakotas. And so I kind of like the fact that there's a better opportunity, because if you do not have a contest, if somebody has a assured run for their seat of office, then why would they feel a need to commit and sign a pledge to commit to the Constitution unless their electorate demand it? And so our leverage will be coming in 2020 as we hopefully build and grow, and as we start working with other organizations like the We the People Foundation and grassroots organizations and so forth, where it's going to be hopefully within 2 years, this will become a standard that they're going to want people to sign pledges that not just taking an oath is going to suffice anymore. I know that the John Birch Society is going down the Oath Keeper's path of, you know, just saying, hey, we got to hold their feet to the fire. I'm sorry. They've been taking these oaths for years and years, and, you know, nobody's been burnt at the stake, so to speak. And so what we have to do is we have to, I think, up the game and make them sign pledges. If they want to represent the party, then the party really needs to have these people signing pledges so that they understand what expectations the party has. And I think I've talked about this before, where the party needs to start setting true hardcore strategies and expectations so that when somebody is not meeting expectations, go, hey, you're clearly not doing this, and you're actually voting for things that we consider unconstitutional, and so we're going to have to let you go. We've already got... What I love, and I tell people this, they just love this, the final message that needs to go out to that person that's serving in the party would be, you know, hey, you send that person that's replacing that legislator to the very last week of the session of the legislative body to introduce to that person, go, hey, with a little note, sealed envelope, like a letter for Ukiah. Anyway, you basically send that off, and the person that's getting replaced will read this letter and go, hey, this is your replacement. Would you mind introducing them? Because we're going to help this guy get elected. I mean, what a poke in the eye, and what a message to send. But anyway, let me get on to the bounty for cod fisheries. And before I do, as I like doing, I want to ask you this one question. Are the words that I'm reading the words of deceit and lies by these framers, or have we been lied to by our professors and by our politicians and so forth? And I will tell you that it is the latter, that the former had integrity beyond comparison. So it's important that I want to get into this last section here. And basically, this is Madison saying, arguments have been advanced to show that because in the regulation of trade, indirect and eventual encouragement is given to manufacturers. Therefore, Congress have the power to give money. Now, he's talking again in a very dramatical sense, because he's basically arguing against Congress having money to do this. The Congress is bound to the enumerated powers. But I'll go on here, and he says, to give money in direct bounties or to grant it in another way that would answer the same purpose. But surely, sir, there is a great and obvious difference which it cannot be necessary to enlarge upon. A duty laid on imported implements of husbandry would, in its operation, be an indirect tax on exported produce. But will anyone say that by the virtue of a mere power to lay duties on imports, Congress might go directly to produce or implements of agriculture or to the articles exported? It is true, duties on exports are expressly prohibited, but if there were no article forbidding them, a power directly to tax exports could never be deduced from a power to tax imports, although such a power might indirectly and incidentally affect exports. In short, sir, without going further into the subject, which I should not have here touched on at all, but for the reasons already mentioned, I venture to declare it is my opinion that were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundation and transmute the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America. And what inferences might be drawn, or what consequences ensue from such a step, it is incumbent on us all well to consider. With respect to the question before the House for striking out the clause, it is immaterial whether it be struck out or so amended as to rest on the avowed principle of the commutation for the drawback. But as a clause has been drawn up by one of my colleagues in order to be substituted, I shall concur in a vote for striking out, reserving to myself a freedom to be governed in my final vote by the modification which may prevail. And so he's clearly telling his fellow congressmen, his fellow representatives, that the federal government, Congress, cannot take the latitudes with these general clauses, the general welfare and defense clause, the commerce clause, the necessary and proper, because that is how you will subvert the Constitution. And that is precisely how the Supreme Court and lawyers started arguing in the cases that later befell this Congress under John Marshall. There were 7 landmark cases, and as a matter of fact, I'll try to get them up here real quickly, because if you understand what John Marshall had done in these 7 cases, then you'll actually understand that he usurped all sorts of authority. Marbury v. Madison in 1803, Fletcher v. Peck in 1810, Sturgis v. Crown and Shield, 1819, Dartmouth College versus Woodard in 1819, McCulloch v. Maryland in 1819, Cohens v. Virginia in 1821, Gibbons v. Ogden in 1824, and each of these created unconstitutional footings that the federal government started expanding on. With the new format, this is it. If you haven't noticed, I don't have a lot of commercials, so this is my fond adieu. We have a final commercial at the end of the break just to sync everybody up. Have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow with even more ranting. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.